Dave from New Jersey. It's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out over Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
And I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
And how you doing, Darren?
I'm doing all right. Summer is winding down. Say goodbye to the summer night.
Dog days of summer. Hot time, summer in the city, back of my neck, getting dirty and gritty.
I mentioned that song too.
Okay.
Summer loving, having a blast.
You've done that, I'm pretty sure.
Did I?
I think so.
Did I just sing all the summer songs? Is that it?
I think you did. You did the Will Smith Summertime.
I did Will Smith Summertime.
And I don't think I recognized it because I've never listened to the lyrics of that song.
Because you're very white. I understand.
That too.
Yeah.
That too.
And I guess I sang all the summer songs. You're welcome,
okay.
Summer. Boys of Summer, I sang that.
You did?
Yeah.
All right.
I can see you. Your brown skin's shining in the sun. You got your hair real low. I don't know the words.
Because you're very black.
Yes, of course. Like,
I know the words to Don Henley songs. Because that's my territory.
That's where you reign supreme.
That's where I'm a Viking.
Oh, Zingaroo. I caught that Simpsons reference. Today we're doing something a little different. We're not doing a movie today.
We are not.
No,
we're not.
No.
We're going back to a TV show.
Yes.
We got to prime the pump for the fall season of SNL.
Indeed. Yeah. Side note, it's weird. We haven't heard too much SNL news this summer, really.
No, I feel like we are just on the verge of finding out all the news, like if there's anybody leaving the show or when the premiere date is going to be, who the first host is going to be.
We don't know. No one's been hired. No one's been fired. No one's left. Like, we don't even know when the start date is. Like, technically, it's been very quiet. So
what we are doing with this podcast, since we don't know when the show is coming back, we are vamping for a few weeks.
Yes. a lot of improv.
Yeah. So, like, last week we did Animal House, the classic comedy movie.
Right.
And this week we decided it might be fun to do Delta House.
Yes,
which
TV show based on the movie.
Little known TV show because it was canceled very quickly. It lasted apparently a total of 13 episodes.
Yeah, one season came out in 1979 on ABC.
The year after the movie came out. And
right.
I mean, I understand why they did this.
Yeah, like you got to strike while the iron's hot. And the movie did like so much business and made so much money.
It was one of the top money makers in 1978.
So they're like, we got to, you know, like we do now in this lovely era of ours. We're like, as soon as something is hot, we just milk it for all it's worth.
That's right.
That's right. Milk it like a fine cow.
And you can see why the producers thought that this could work on television. Because, like, right. MASH had been a big hit movie. That was very raw. That was very dirty. Had nudity and violence and all that.
Yeah.
And they made a successful TV show out of that. So why not have that happen with Animal House?
I mean, it makes sense. Actually, when you first pitched this idea, I was kind of taken aback. I was like, really?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't, because it's a show I didn't even know about.
Yeah.
And like, and then you mentioned that like a lot of the same characters that were in the movie didn't make it to the series, but some did.
A fair amount of the actors crossed over. We had James Widows, who was Hoover,
right,
president of the Deltas. He came over. John Vernon, who was Dean Wormer, he did the show. We had Stephen Furst as Flounder, and then we had Bruce McGill as D-Day.
Right.
So we have four actors from the movie carrying over. That's a pretty good.
That's a pretty good
amount.
Chunk, yeah. But Otter, the guy that played Otter, wasn't in it. We got a new Otter. We got a new Otter.
Mm-hmm.
Got a new Pinto.
Yeah.
And I mean, of course, the central figure is Bluto.
Right.
We have a man who plays his brother, Jim Blutarski, who plays Blotto.
Blotto, yes.
Yeah.
And the first episode is all about the Deltas welcoming Blotto into the Delta House. And Blotto was played by Josh Mostel, who is the son of Zero Mostel, who you might know from the producers.
I did not know that.
So that I found interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I thought the guy kind of looked like Josh Gad.
Reminded me of Josh Gad,
too. He looked a lot like Josh.
So much like Josh Gad.
It's like Josh Gad, a time traveler? How did he go back to 79?
He was like the Josh Gad of 1979.
It
was kind of eerie.
Yeah, and on the show, there was no Boone, either. Boone and Katie kind of just got written off.
Boone, they totally eliminated his character.
Right.
And instead, Pinto has a girlfriend named Muffy, and so they're almost like a sort of proto Boone and Katie. I thought.
I guess just to figure why get another guy to play Boone and have this relationship with this other girl, we just have Pinto do it. And I don't know.
Maybe and I can kind of understand why they made that decision, because like the movie has a lot of different characters, and right. you might want to pare it down a little bit. Like even yeah. even the MASH show, I keep going back to comparing it to MASH, but like MASH, they eliminated the character of Duke, who was a major character in the movie right. version, yeah. Tom Skerritt's character. So I can see why they want to pare down the number of characters. And right. like there's no Babs. No Babs Jensen.
No Babs, yeah.
There's just Mandy and... Greg Marmelon is in there, but they barely use him. It's mostly about Niedermeyer and Dean Wormer.
Those are the two bad guys, main bad guys.
Yeah.
And it's a
yeah.
new Niedermeyer, too.
Yes. There's new people playing Niedermeyer, Otter, Muffy is a new character. We have a new Greg Marmelon. And who am I forgetting? Is there anyone else I'm forgetting? I don't think so. I think that's about everybody.
I think that's about it.
And yeah. they introduced another new character by the name of Bombshell, who was played by a young actress. Let me look. Michelle Pfeiffer.
I don't ring any bell. Did she go on to do anything?
Well, let me click on her IMDb profile.
See, now it's spelled with a P, so it might be pronounced Pfeiffer.
Yeah, it could be Pfeiffer.
And guys, tweet at us if you ever heard this person, because I'm blanking.
Yeah, let's see. Nominated for 3 Oscars, another 24 wins, and 48 nominations.
So she's known.
She is known. She is known for this is literally what's on her IMDb page.
Hit it.
Hairspray.
Yeah.
What Lies Beneath. One Fine Day, and Dangerous Liaisons. Really? Are those the first 4 Michelle Pfeiffer movies that come to mind?
I'm a huge fan of like the Doug Loves Movie podcast, and they have a game where you're supposed to guess what, like on IMDb, the movies people are known for. Because like for some reason, IMDb has a weird algorithm for people's top 4 movies. And like it's never the 4 movies you think it is. Because I think of Michelle Pfeiffer, I think Scarface, I think Dangerous Minds. I think
Batman Returns,
of course. Yeah. Witches of Eastwick.
Yeah, I mean, Dangerous Liaisons is the only one out of these 4 I would immediately think of.
I'll give you that.
Although I do enjoy One Fine Day. I think that's a fun. I remember that being a fun romantic comedy. And
I didn't know you were a rom com guy.
I enjoy the occasional rom com. Now I've not seen One Fine Day since it was out in 1996. Ooh. So maybe it doesn't hold up that great.
All right,
but,
maybe.
It's George Clooney and Michelle Pfeiffer. How can that not be charming?
Two beautiful people falling in love in an ILD in New York City, I'm assuming it takes place in.
But anyway, this series, Delta House, it starred a young 21-year-old Michelle Pfeiffer.
I mean, she was.
As Bombshell.
I mean,
who was like friend of the Delta. So she's like the girl. She's the eye candy.
Yeah, I mean, like a young Michelle, I mean, hubba hubba. She's like distractingly beautiful. It's just
very, very striking.
It's like, I can't even look at you.
And it's so funny. It like we said, it's a 13 episode show. And like over the course of this, I think you see them kind of start to realize what they have in Michelle Pfeiffer.
Right. Oh, so like, they put her in more and more.
Like in the next to last episode, Hoover and the Bomb. It's all about James Widow's character, Hoover, and he falls for Bombshell.
Of course.
And he's, like, pursuing her. And so she has more of a part in that than she does in any of the other episodes. But
she's like the Kelly Bundy of the 70s.
She's almost like a walk-on in the first few episodes. And then, like, by the end of the show, they're like, oh, we can, like, write material for her, and she can do well with it. She might have a future in this acting business.
She can, like, talk and stuff as well as look pretty.
But it's almost comical. I mean, the character's basically just written all around for her looks, and there are, like, several moments in the series where it's just, you know, Bombshell walks in, and she's snooptifying.
Yeah.
Or they're, like, panning up her body, or she's in, like, a bathing suit for no real reason.
Yep.
And I am not complaining. I am just observing.
The TV are just giving us what the people want.
And we wanted 21-year-old Michelle Pfeiffer in a bathing suit. I think our record as a country bears that out.
That's right. That's what America wants. God bless us, everyone.
There was one other character that they introduced that was like original to the show. They had a character called A.S. Einswine, who was like the geeky Delta.
That's the guy with the red hat and
okay. And he has glasses, and he at one point he identifies himself as a chief engineer and mathematical specialist. Very weird, pointless character. I was just like, why don't you just like use Stork or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess. Well, this is like after. Well, didn't Doug McKinney? Doug Kenny pass away or anything?
So maybe he was still around in 19. I doubt he would have wanted to be involved with the show. But I was just saying, why not use the character of Stork?
Oh, maybe.
But I mean, because they recast all these other characters.
I guess so. Maybe I don't know. Maybe he didn't want. I don't know.
I don't know.
I just
thought it was a weird decision. I didn't think that character really added much of anything to the mix.
Yeah, I hear you. It was just like, we need like a nerd in here to like stuff.
Oh, and they also had Professor Jennings, Donald Sutherland's character, carry over. He was played by Peter Kastner. Most of the other actors on the show that didn't really go on to anything big, they don't have even profile pictures on IMDb. So a lot of their acting careers didn't go real far.
Image not found.
Yeah.
A lot of where, like D-Day at the end of Animal House, whereabouts unknown.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there are a few others, like Wendy Goldman, who played Muffy. She has gone on to a career. Peter Fox, I was seeing, who played Otter.
Oh, yeah.
He has become a playwright.
Oh.
And Josh Mostel, I believe, is still working. I looked him up before before I came over to record. So,
yeah, far out.
But I like the first episode, I thought was kind of weird because like they introduce... You're getting used to all these new actors playing these characters that you already know.
Right.
And most of the new actors that they cast are like these dark-haired guys, but they look so much alike.
It took me a while to realize who was who.
And they don't really identify people by name. You're just supposed to like,
yeah.
Oh, that guy's wearing the same sweater that Tim Matheson wore, so I guess he's Otter. But they never call him Otter.
Yeah, it took him, like the Pinto guy, the guy played Pinto and the guy played Otter, like, it took me a while to say, hey, who's...
They look too much alike.
Yeah, I mean, Hoover I could tell because he was tall and blonde, so
right.
That's how he was different, just because he was tall and blonde.
And he was played by the same
And he's played by the same guy, yeah. But, like, all the other guys are just, like, nondescript brunette dudes.
Seriously, by the sweaters. In the third episode, I was still like, okay, which person is this person again?
Yeah.
And it was weird. So that was a handicap.
Yeah.
We're
not saying they all look alike, but
no, I'd say this okay. group actors, a lot of them look way too much alike.
All white guys look alike. You heard it here, people.
I didn't say that.
That's what I took away from what you said.
Okay. Well, yeah. That's your journey.
But yeah, I mean, as far as shows goes, I mean, what do you think of the first episode? Like, because whenever they make a TV show from a movie, it's always weird because like you kind of. You have different chemistry with the characters, and it's always a little... It's never going to be what it was in the movie. It's either going to be like a whole new thing with a whole new vibe.
Right.
You know, it's going to be better or worse.
You can hope for is that they find their own chemistry as a group, and they get their own types of stories going.
Yeah, like with MASH or The Odd Couple or shows like that.
And, I mean, years later, like, they made Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
One of the best,
successful TV show.
Yeah.
So it can be done.
It can.
It was not done in this case.
Ah.
It is not a good series.
It's
bad.
It's pretty cheesy. I mean, even from, like, the theme, like, when you hear the theme song, Delta Hell.
Yeah.
the Dean don't like them because they don't play by the rules.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like some weird, like, 80s rock. Cheesy.
Yeah, it's actually, well, as long as we're talking about the theme song. Okay, the theme song was written by Jim Steinman, who's the guy who, like, co-wrote most of Meat Love's songs.
That name sounds familiar.
And
Jim Steinman.
The lyrics were written by National Lampoon editors Tony Hendra and Sean Kelly. Some bits of the melody of the song were reworked into a Meat Loaf song called Dead Ringer for Love. And I did get Dead Ringer for Love up on YouTube. Do you want to hear a little bit of it?
Sure. Can we use this for... Do you have to get the rights for Dead Ringer for Love?
I'll just play it like a few seconds of it just to...
Wow.
Yeah. They're getting to the hook soon.
Okay.
You can hear it. Baby, Well,
I hear it.
They had the baby. So there was that. Hang on a second. I forgot to get up the page on the Delta House lyrics. There, I found.
Yeah, it's like you know, like it's like a like the '80s rock where it's like, yeah, we play by our own rules and the dean don't like us because we're crazy. We're Delta House. Ka-yow!
Yeah, I
like,
mean, it was
like that.
It was it was a weird thing. Is like they don't even. They didn't even call the show Animal House, which is a weird decision.
Yeah, that's another thing. Why did they call it Delta House? Based, I mean, was it like a legal thing? Why don't you just call it Animal House? What the
flip? I don't know. It's a really weird thing because like Animal House was so popular that other networks they started up their own fraternity and sorority type shows. There was another show called Brothers and Sisters, and I've forgotten the name of the other one.
Okay.
But none of them were very successful. And this is like the one show out of those three that could call itself Animal House.
Yeah,
and they don't call themselves Animal House.
You know, you have the name and people love the name, so just use the name.
You're the guys. You're the guys.
Yeah, why you gotta go Delta? We need to separate from Animal House and do our own thing. It's like, no, you can just the whole show is based around the movie, so just go by the name.
Yeah, so that's a weird decision. And I couldn't find hard information on this, but like apparently they had a lot of fights with the network about content on it because this show was on like the family hour. So it was on like 8 p.m. or 7 p.m., whatever it was.
Right.
So they couldn't really do any of the outrageous stuff they did in the movie.
And that's kind of the one thing that I kind of worried about where like the movie was such a hard R and they were just doing this outrageous stuff. And like whenever you try to take an R-rated movie and make it into like a family friendly thing, it never really translates. But sometimes it does, but for the most part, it's like, oh, you're taking out a lot of the bite just so you can have more people like this thing. But the bite is what made the thing the thing.
I noticed like towards the end of the show, I realized I was like, we never really see the Deltas partying in this show.
Yeah.
We hear about them partying.
We do, don't we?
They just like mention like, oh, we had this party. But they never actually have a party.
No. Interesting, isn't it?
I know.
That's like, exactly. That's what I'm talking about.
So apparently we're supposed to think all the outrageous shenanigans are happening off screen.
Yeah. Wow, that party we had was crazy, wasn't it?
And like there's reference to them drinking. You see them having kegs, and like they might occasionally have a beer in their hand, but that's about it.
Yeah, they don't go too like crazy with it.
No.
And there was actually there's another thing that I kind of because this is supposed to be like taken right after the movie.
Yes.
So. Why is Faber House? Why is Delta House still around? Because like, didn't they close down at the end of Animal House?
Well, I think they were doing something kind of similar to what they did for like the MASH and the Odd Couple TV shows. Because like at the end of the Odd Couple play and the Odd Couple movie, Felix moves out of the apartment.
Right.
And in at the end of the MASH movie, Hawkeye and Duke go home. I think they were just like kind of taking the premise of the movie and then maybe. Events, something like the movie happened in this world, but maybe not those exact events.
Revisionist history.
Yeah.
Alternate universe.
Right.
Interesting.
Right. And it, like in the opening episode, Dean Wormer, he says that Bluto, John Belushi's character, he was in the army. I can't remember if like he was expelled and drafted or what. But
either way, John Belushi's character is in the army and then the TV. So, yeah.
And he's like, oh, well, we finally got rid of that guy.
Yeah.
And then the pilot episode, the Deltas get a letter from Bluto saying, hey, my little brother,
Jim
Blutarski, is going to come to Faber.
Right.
Would you, the Deltas, take care of him? And
And
so they're all excited, and they're like, oh, Bluto's brother's going to come. He's going to be just like Bluto.
Right.
And then he comes... And he arrives and he's like this very restrained, bookish guy with glasses.
Yeah, like a nerdy, dorky guy in a suit. And they're like, oh, you're not like Bluto.
Yeah, yeah.
But then, of course, as the show goes on,
he becomes like Bluto. They bring out the Bluto in him. And he's known as Blotto.
That's right.
Clever. Yeah, yeah. But again, the character seemed really vaguely defined. Like he wasn't. He didn't behave as much like Bluto as I was expecting him to.
Yeah, I thought it would be like a guy who was just trying to do his best Belushi impression.
Right.
And I mean, it was a little of that, but then it wasn't.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times he just seemed like a normal guy.
Yeah, he wasn't.
He seemed more like Flounder than Bluto most of the time.
Yeah, that was weird, because, like, you already have a Flounder, so why have another Flounder? Like,
yeah, I don't know. A lot of duplication in this show,
yes,
it seems like.
Very much so.
But it was weird. Should we go into like the various stories that they did?
Yeah, sure. Let's go into some stories here.
So like the first episode is all about Blotto's arrival.
Right.
You know, it was okay. The first episode was written by the guys who wrote the movie.
Okay.
We had Harold Ramis and
Kenny.
Doug Kenny, right, and Chris Miller.
Right.
So they collaborated on the first episode, and like some of the National Lampoon episode writers.
I mean, Ramis and Kane, they were like EPs on this whole series, right?
I think so. Yeah. I wonder if that was just a contractual thing, though.
Possibly.
You know, maybe it's just like their names are on it, and they didn't really participate beyond that. I believe Matty Simmons, who is like the publisher of the Lampoon, he co-wrote some episodes, and he was a producer on the show. I think he was more actively involved.
All right.
And John Hughes wrote some episodes.
Whoa.
The future writer-director, because he was a National Lampoon writer.
Johnny Hughes? I did not know that.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, like the Vacation movie came out of a story that he wrote for National Lampoon. So,
look at that. The more you know. We teach you guys.
So there was some talent involved in the show, but it just, for whatever reason, didn't work.
I mean, it's the same, like I said before, like chemistry, it's like a big thing. Like, I don't know, like people just think, oh, we'll just get these other actors in here and like, you know, they'll play, it'll be the same thing. But like, you know, you can't, lightning don't strike twice.
No.
I mean, it's still an okay show, but I mean, and also the laugh track that pops in and out, that kind of,
yeah, the laugh track was kind of tough to take. There are some weak jokes in the show. The show is not especially funny.
No.
And I did find it amusing where they have some lines that were clearly intended as jokes, and then the laugh track is totally silent.
Like, even the laugh track?
The laugh track is just like, we don't agree.
Even the laugh track was like, nah, that's not good.
Yeah, there's an episode, the next to last episode is an episode, it's called Hoover and the Bomb.
Ooh.
where James Widow's character, Hoover, he gets a crush. He falls in love with Michelle Pfeiffer's character, Bombshell.
Who wouldn't?
And she's very unsure how to handle this, because she just considers all the Delta guys friends, like, right, even Otter, who she's seen making out with in the opening credits.
Yeah, I thought
credits.
Her and Otter were like going out. And
No. Like, Otter has a line. He's like Bombshell says, like, oh, Otter and I are just friends. And then Otter has a line, hey, wait a minute. Ah, just kidding, guys. Bombshell and I are just friends. and the actor, Peter Fox, he delivers it like it's a joke.
Right.
But the laugh track is completely silent. I just enjoyed that, where the laugh track was just like, nope, not giving that to you.
Even the laugh track can't. Wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there were a few funny parts. I always like Dean Wormer's parts in the show. They're like, I like his insults, because like, he'll call somebody like, you know, I'm Dean Wormer, you Eckstein? Or like, he'll say like those old-timey insults.
I will say that John Vernon was amazing in the show. He was great. He did not miss a step from the movie.
Yeah.
He is hands down the best actor in this show.
There was one point where he was talking to Flounder, and like, Flounder came into his office and he was like, have a seat. And Flounder gets all flustered and nervous.
Yeah.
And like, he sits on the floor.
Yeah.
And then he says, sit in the chair, you hula hoop.
Yeah.
I don't know why that made me laugh.
I mean, John Vernon is just wonderful. I came out of this with like a greater respect for John Vernon. I respected him before, but now he was wonderful.
Yeah,
he was great.
And I mean, there was a couple episodes where he was like the lead too. Like, there was one where he was like having an affair on his wife.
Yeah, that was an episode called "The Fall of Dean Wormer."
Yeah, and like, I think his wife found out, and
yeah, the Deltas, they are taking photographs of Bombshell in like the boardroom adjoining Dean Wormer's office.
Yeah.
Because any flimsy excuse to get Michelle Pfeiffer into a swimsuit, this show is taking.
Oh, yes. All of them. It takes all the excuses.
It takes all of the excuses. It's kind of hilarious. But then, and Dean Wormer in the room next, he sneaks in this young co-ed and he's having an affair with her, which seemed weird to me because I never really pictured the guy from the movie having an affair.
Yeah, like it seemed out of character, but.
But I mean, it's a show, that's what you're doing. And they end up, because they were taking pictures of Bombshell, they take pictures of Dean Wormer having the affair.
Yes.
And so
flagrante
delicto. So they're basically like blackmailing Dean Wormer.
But yeah, but then his wife finds out and like. Yeah, I think she tells the board some of that.
The board has this whole hearing about it,
right?
And then the Deltas end because the Deltas discover that any potential replacement for Dean Wormer is going to be even worse.
Right.
There was like somebody from military academy or something who was like throwing people out for tardiness or something like that.
Right.
Solitary confinement for curfew violation. That's what it was. So they follow Marion Wormer, Dean Wormer's wife, and they. They discover that she's having an affair with Niedermeyer's father, Buster Niedermeyer, who's on the board.
So they're both cheating?
So they're both cheating on each other, both the Wormers. They do not have a happy marriage, apparently.
Oh, boy.
And they show the photos to the board, and they basically blackmail, because it has to be a unanimous vote to fire Dean Wormer. And so the Niedermeyer and Mrs. Wormer, they both recant their testimony or whatever.
Right.
And Dean Wormer is saved.
And Wormer goes back to his loveless marriage to his wife.
That's right.
Happy ending. Freeze frame.
And they have another episode The Blotto Who... Was there something else you wanted to say about
that one? I think it's the one you were talking about.
Who Came to Dinner.
Yeah, we were about to talk about the same episode at the same time. It's weird.
Yeah, that was another one where Dean Wormer accidentally hits Blotto with his car.
Because he's drunk driving.
Another thing I wouldn't have pictured the Dean Wormer of the movie doing.
Yeah, that's like, what? I thought he was like this. All right.
But again, John Vernon plays the hell out of this.
He does.
Even though the character was somewhat reconceived from the movie. John Vernon, amazing.
He does, yeah.
Love him. Thumbs up on John Vernon.
Yeah. So the Dean hits Blotto with his car.
Mm-hmm.
And Blotto has like a broken leg, I believe. Something like that.
He's in the hospital.
Yeah.
And Dean Wormer wants him to sign like a statement saying that he doesn't bear the dean responsible,
and
it ends up with Blotto staying in the dean's house and basically taking over his house.
Almost like the plot of A Night at the Roxbury, wouldn't you say? Like, because what you call it?
I don't remember.
Richard Grieco. Don't you remember? We just talked about that movie a couple of
weeks. Yeah,
Richard Grieco hit the Roxbury guys with the car.
Oh, yeah. I was like, when did somebody stay at somebody's house?
I was under
that part. Okay.
He's at the house, but he got him into the Roxbury.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just saying. Maybe not the Roxbury took their ideas from this episode of Delta
Okay,
House.
Let's just dish those accusations of plagiarism out willy-nilly. Let's just do that.
Let's do it. It's fun time.
Okay.
It's the end of the summer. Let's do it.
That was Darren saying that.
You can follow me at Darren Credible.
He has more money than thee.
You can
sue him much more easily. You will get more out of him.
Let's not say that.
But like in the episode with Blotto staying at Dean Wormer's house, like towards the end, like Blotto's having a party and they pile everybody into Dean Wormer's bedroom and they're basically doing like the States Room scene from Marx Brothers movie. I think it's A Night at the Opera where they do
Animal
that.
Crackers. It might be A Night. Yeah, I know you're talking about.
Yeah, where they crowd everybody into the room. But it didn't really work as well because it's like a good size room.
Yeah, like it could fit everybody.
Yeah, everyone was comfortably fitting in there. And then they do the same payoff gag where everybody spills out of the door.
Oh.
And I was like, yeah, that worked because it was a confined, it was a small cabin on a ship.
Yeah, and like this is like a TV set. You can make a smaller room if you need
to exactly.
So why make this huge
room?
You
built the room for this episode. Why didn't you make it a smaller room?
Just push the walls together. What the flip?
I'm impressed you can afford all these extras. That's cool.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah. Something I found very interesting about the show is that the movie was shot in Oregon on an actual college campus.
Right.
And the movie, because it's not practical to shoot a TV show in Oregon, I guess.
Yes.
They shot it on the Universal back lot. So
they asked for Babs.
Yeah. See what you did there. And I don't know if you recognize it. Like they're basically using the town square set that they have on the Universal back lot.
Okay.
And like one of the main buildings on the campus, it's the clock tower from the Back to the Future movies.
Whoa, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
I gotta go back.
If you look carefully at the show, and I am not asking you to rewatch the show because I would not wish that on you. like they're in the town square of Back to the Future. They just pretend that that's the campus, and it doesn't particularly look like a college campus outside of that one building that has the columns on the front.
Save the clock tower.
Right.
Nice.
But that's what they did.
I guess it looks like a college campus enough.
Yeah.
That we can.
Yeah. And I mean, it's doubling for it either being the college campus or in town. But they usually don't have enough extras to really sell it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's another thing I noticed about it. It's like, oh, should be more students.
And the show is only like kind of sort of period looking. It takes place in 1962.
Yeah. They mentioned that at the beginning of every episode.
Yeah.
It just recalled 1962.
Right.
Recalled 1962.
And they just flash that at the beginning because they just really want to drill that into your head.
Yeah.
And they do some topical stuff, but like...
The one with the bomb and the Russians.
Right, right. And there was a... Oh, you probably didn't see this. You said you didn't catch the last couple episodes, right?
Yeah, I kind of dipped in and out of these episodes. Like, I got the general gist of it, but...
Right. Okay, well, I slogged through all the episodes that were on YouTube.
You're a true American.
So I am more committed to this podcast than you, apparently.
Ooh, wow.
I'm just saying that.
Shots fired.
I'm just saying that. But there was a weird reference in one of the last episodes to, I think it was the death of Marilyn Monroe.
Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, and I looked it up. Marilyn Monroe died in August of 1962. So that's like right in the timeline of this show.
And they make, all right.
And they, I think it was in the episode where Hoover falls in love with Bombshell.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a line like, oh, Bombshell makes Marilyn Monroe look like garbage or whatever, and then like Blotto walks in and then he's like all like, oh, and I was like, wait, that's weird. What are they referencing, the death of Marilyn Monroe? And I looked it up and it was like August of 62, and
wow, that's
yeah, it was weird. It was
that's
really
a weird
and it wasn't quite like a joke, or if it was a joke it just didn't come off.
Maybe that's the part, because like they maybe that's one of those things where they feel like they need to be outrageous and say outrageous, because it's like,
yeah,
it's, you know, it's Animal House, and if they can't be outrageous on a TV show with nudity and partying, they could say outrageous things here and
yeah,
there.
Yeah, maybe. But, I don't know. I don't know. I was just like, what was that?
I don't know.
But anyway, I was talking about like the look of the show. This looks kind of like the later seasons of Happy Days, where all the actors, they're not really maintaining the period hairstyles anymore. They've got like hair over their ears. They've got those feathered 70s dudes that nobody had in 1962.
Yeah, it's... Yeah,
It's only like vaguely period look at best. And I don't know if it was a budget thing or they just didn't care or what.
Yeah, it was... I don't know. Maybe... I mean, I guess as far as ratings go, you know how... did the show do well in the ratings? Maybe at some point they were like... Towards the end, they were like, look, we know we're going to get canceled, so let's not put much effort into this.
I wasn't able to find any information on the ratings, but they couldn't have been that great since they canceled it so easily. Apparently, it was canceled more because of the battles over the content.
Mm.
Actually, here on Wikipedia, it says, Delta House initially did well in the ratings. However, executive producers Maddie Simmons and Ivan Reitman's constant fights with ABC over content led the network to cancel the show after 13 episodes. So
wow, so it was doing all right, but like,
I
didn't want to deal with. Huh.
Yeah, yeah. So
that's
interesting. With a little more time, maybe the show could have turned into something good.
Yeah,
I mean, it's. Wow. I felt like they were figuring out a little more by the end.
Okay.
I
just assumed there was like a bomb from the get-go, just because I've never heard of it. You can't find it on DVD or streaming anywhere.
No,
like
I mean
that?
We found it. It just happens to be up on YouTube. There was one person who uploaded most of the episodes of the show to YouTube, not in good quality. They're obviously from a videotape, and it's like a very shaky picture. The sound is bad.
Yeah. So if you like that old school VCR taped quality, you're in luck, because that's what you're getting.
Yeah,
when you watch the Delta House on YouTube.
Let's see, we got a few other episodes. There's the shortest yard where Dean Wormer is impressed with how far Blotto can punt a football, so he tries to get him into the football team.
Right, right.
But then something happens to Blotto, and Flounder has to substitute for him.
Because the two are interchangeable, like we talked about.
Exactly.
There's
an episode called Parents Day where the Delta's parents are coming, and to make a good impression on their parents, they switch houses with the Omegas, and they distract the Omegas and get them out of the house, because they're doing this without the Omegas knowing.
Oh, of course. Cause...
And they send all the Omega parents over to the Delta house, so they're all horrified.
Oh. Hijinks abound.
There's one called The Guns of October that takes place during the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yeah, that's the one I was talking about.
Yeah. And all the Omegas have a bomb shelter. And right. Dean Wormer gets in the bomb shelter with him, but they don't have a radio in the bomb shelter, so they don't know when a false alarm happens.
No one thought to bring a radio?
No. They brought their what was it? It was some food item. I don't know if I have it. I don't have it in my notes right now. But anyway, at the end of the episode, the Omegas think that a nuclear war has actually happened, and the Deltas realize that the Omegas do that, and they try to fool them, and they put up this like diorama in front of their periscope.
So it makes them think that the world's been decimated.
Right. There's an episode where the Deltas get a house mother.
The
lady in waiting.
Yes, the weightlifter Russian.
Yes, yes. That was one of the John Hughes written episodes. There's an episode where D-Day receives his draft notice, and the Deltas throw him a party to send him off.
That's right. And like, it turns out D-Day was like the spiritual glue holding the Delta House together. So.
Which was weird because.
Yeah,
I never really get that impression in any other episode or at any point in the movie. But.
Yeah, I mean they said in the beginning of that episode like no he's like the cornerstone.
Yeah,
like he's the one holding the whole Delta House together. So without him, the Delta House falls apart. And throughout the episode, the Delta House does fall apart because he's not there.
Yeah, it was just a weird thing. I don't know what the deal was with that, but you know they had to be all broken up that D-Day was potentially leaving.
Right.
That was interesting because they did a bit that I read that they were going to do in the movie. Apparently, in the movie, there was going to be a scene where they after they get expelled from Faber, they go to the draft board.
Oh.
And apparently, the actor who plays D-Day can actually turn his feet around. And that's how he got out of the draft. And he does that bit in the episode.
Oh.
And they didn't put it in the movie because they were too scared that people would injure themselves trying to imitate it.
Oh.
But I guess on primetime TV, nobody cares about that, so.
Yeah, that's whatevs.
Fuck up your feet, kids.
Yeah. Don't you want to be cool like D-Day? Turn your feet around.
Episode 7 is called The Deformity. That was actually the one episode that is not on YouTube for some reason.
The Deformity?
Yeah, it says, Pinto's acne makes him self-conscious about his look, so his frat brothers try to help him regain his confidence. Meanwhile, Dean Wormer tries angling for grant money for the science program from a visiting military officer, and his best chance at getting it is Hoover's science project. Haven't seen that episode because it wasn't on YouTube, because it's the one I didn't have to watch. That is now my favorite episode.
There you go.
Let's see. There's one where Flounder falls in love with Mandy Pepperidge.
Yes, that one I saw.
That's called Big Man on Campus, and the Deltas all try to make Flounder look like Mandy's dream man. That wasn't a bad one.
That was all right one. Interesting twist at the end of that one. I was like, oh. Okay.
What was the twist?
At the end because like throughout the episode, everybody makes Flounder look like he's awesome. Like he's like, oh, everybody's. You know, and you know, he's like this big trendsetter guy.
Yeah.
And then at the end, Mandy, you know, she's taken by all these things everybody's saying. So
yeah, she actually falls for Kent Dorfman.
But then at the end, Kent Dorfman says, "Oh, I don't want to go out with you because like now that I'm this awesome guy, like you know, I should play the field more."
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he was trying to get her to go to the big ROTC dance.
Right, then like at the end, like. Everybody in the house like, hey, where's Mandy? It's like, well, no, and like if Mandy wants me, like the other women will probably want me too.
Right,
like I can play the field. Like everybody's upset because they did all this stuff, so the you know Flounder can get a chick. And
yeah,
like,
that was a pretty good twist.
Yeah, man. I was like,
that was a good episode. That was on the higher tier, I think. Let's see, there was also we talked about the fall of Dean Wormer. The Blotto came to dinner. There's an episode towards the end called Campus Fair. Where they were planning to use Bombshell to win a beauty contest, but Bombshell is sent away. Dean Wormer is trying to sabotage the contest because the Deltas get... I forget what it was.
You can't even remember this episode.
I watched this episode like literally last night. The Deltas get something that helps them increase their power base at Faber somehow.
Gotcha.
And so Wormer, who's trying to sabotage this, he sends Bombshell away because she's a geology major. So he sends her off on this archaeological dig somewhere.
Gotcha.
To like Venezuela or whatever. And
he can do that? Send her to Venezuela?
Yeah, through the class. Yeah.
All right.
He arranged like a field trip or something like that. Anyway, she's somewhere out of reach.
I guess it's in the budget to
do
that.
And so they put Pinto's girlfriend, Muffy, into the beauty contest instead.
And she's a fine looking...
She's fine. She's got that like that 70s Dorothy Hamill cut.
Got the bowl cut happening.
The bowl cut, yeah. So, I mean, I didn't find Muffy a particularly interesting character, so I didn't...
Yeah, she was just kind of there.
She was there. Yeah.
You know, just doing things. And, making things happen. Good for her.
There was... Like Hoover and the Bomb, I like the setup of it a lot, where Hoover falls in love with Bombshell.
Right.
And the Deltas, like, the Bombshell's too nice to, like, let him down easy.
Right.
So he's like, oh, I'm going to pin you, and we're in love, and we're going to get married. He's, like, already talking about marriage and stuff.
Jesus, wow.
And, yeah, he falls hard. But, you know, again, 21-year-old Michelle Pfeiffer. So, understandable.
Hachihuahua.
But then, like, halfway through the episode... Hoover has this whole dream sequence about being married to Bombshell.
Uh-huh.
Where he's like the Deltas talk to him about it, and they're like, "Well, you know, you're pre-law. You'd have to. Would she work while you are in law school, or you know, would you get a job? What can you do?" And he's like, "Oh, I could be a plumber." So in this dream, he's a plumber, and Wormer is his boss. And then Flounder is her deadbeat brother, and okay. She has a kid named Bobbo who looks just like Blotto.
So in his dreams, he's imagining he's like
and
a
this
cuck?
Is like this is like half the episode.
Okay,
it's really weird. I was like, you had the makings of a good story here, and then you just did this weird dream sequence. It's like half the episode. But anyway, that convinces like Hoover that we shouldn't be together. So he goes to break up with Bombshell. And he's like,
but I mean, he's never with Bombshell to begin with. Like, they're not.
Well, they kind of sort of go on dates because like she's too nice to like be like, I just look at you as a friend.
Right.
She's very conflicted about this, so she's like, she goes on a couple date-ish things with him. They go on a picnic. They're like walking in town. So, I understand why Hoover gets this idea.
Gotcha. Okay.
So yeah, ladies. Be clear with the guys.
Yeah, just if you don't want
I know it's tough to do, but it's better to rip that Band-Aid off.
Yeah,
quickly.
just break our hearts.
That's right. That's right. Why is my phone blowing up? Oh my god! Oh no!
Well, at least we do have listeners. That's at least
this backfired. Oh dear!
I immediately regret this decision.
I'm going to make some calls once we're done recording.
Oh boy. Are you okay to go on with
this? Yeah, I'm okay. I'm good.
Boy. This took a turn.
But anyway, there's a cute bit at the end where so Hoover goes to break up with Bombshell and he's like, "Oh, you know what? I think I should get my pin back. I think that would be good." And like Bombshell
we're moving too fast,
and
baby.
And Bombshell goes over to like her bedside table and she picks out this little box and she dumps out like a few dozen pins that she's gotten from guys.
Yeah.
And he like has to pick out his fraternity pin to
Yipes.
I thought that was cute.
Yeah, no, I liked it. It's like, wow.
And the last episode is called The Matriculation of Kent Dorfman, where Flounder's parents they threaten to they remove Flounder from Faber.
Okay.
But because his grades are so low, he can't get into any other college. Okay. The only other college he can get into is the old girl school, the Emily Dickinson College, where they picked up the women in the movie.
Right. Okay.
And Dean Wormer really wants to get Flounder back because Flounder's parents are big donors to the school. They donate like $6,000 a year.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. And his brother's legacy. That's right.
Yeah. Gotcha. And he's like, oh, well, and with Flounder's grades, it'll take him like 10 years to get his BA. So that's like $6,000 the school will get.
Just milking that cow.
Exactly. And so Wormer's trying to get Flounder back. And then Flounder, when he's in Emily Dickinson, he becomes really popular because he's the only guy.
Of course.
He gets a girlfriend and he's like preparing things for the women and all this. And then he becomes like this very stuck up guy. He visits the Deltas and the Deltas are like, oh, you're a horrible person now.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and he's dating like this beatnik type girlfriend who hates all the Deltas. And
interesting.
Yeah. But, Flounder comes to his senses.
Yes, and he comes back and it becomes like, you know, the regular low self-esteem Flounder we all come
to know. The status quo is once again maintained.
Hooray!
And they restore the status quo. Yay. So, yeah, it's a mixed bag. It's overall not very good.
Yeah, I mean, the first season of any show is it's weird. It's like, Yeah, there are very few TV shows where they knock it out the park right out the gate. It's always,
right.
They're always trying to find their footing. I mean, even shows like Seinfeld or like Cheers, like the first season is, well, maybe not the first. Well,
the first season of Cheers is freaking amazing.
All right, I'll take that back. Yeah. Whoa. Stand down.
I got your back, Ryan Daly.
Okay. But like, yeah. No, all right. Yeah, but I know like usually the first season of any, of most shows.
Yeah, you're trying stuff. Not all of it works. Yeah, right. You're kind of feeling it out and figure out like what kind of stories are we telling? Which of the actors have chemistry together? Yeah. What should we write to?
You're finding your footing.
What does this show do well? Right.
So, I mean, for this show, like especially when it's in the shadow of the movie, which casts a huge shadow, like everybody is just going to compare it to that.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm sure people watch TV shows like, well, this is good, but it's not like the movie. I think like nowadays when TV shows do that, they do a thing where, they do a thing where they kind of take the idea of the movie and make it its own thing. Like like the TV show Westworld. It's not like the movie at all. It's like a whole new thing, but it has like the sort of ideas of like the essence of the movie in this TV show. Like the same thing with Fargo they did. What We Do in the Dark, that TV show.
The Shadows.
What We Do in the Shadows.
Why did I write
Dark?
That's the vampire.
What We Do in the Shadows. And like they kind of take the idea, the essence of the movie and make it into this whole new thing. Or even like Friday Night Lights too. I haven't seen, but I've heard.
I think those, you know, some of those shows also were helped by, they have a little distance between the movie and the show.
Oh, yeah.
mean, here they're trying to do Animal House like right after Animal House.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I understand, like we talked about, I understand that because you want to make the money and strike while the iron's hot, but at the same time, people are already going to compare it to the movie, and you can't do things in the TV show that you did in the movie, so.
No.
Like, it's a delicate balance to maintain.
Yeah, it's tough. So it didn't quite succeed, but you know, they were trying. There were a couple things that
kind
of sort of amused me.
Something
I didn't like most of the new actors. I felt like a lot of them were very bland in their roles.
Same thing too. Like they didn't really stand. Not too many of the actors really stood out. Were like, oh, that guy's really good. They were just like kind of.
I did find James Widows very charming in the episode with Bombshell, where he had like a lot to do.
That seemed to be your favorite episode.
It was half my favorite episode because it made that horrible choice to do the dream sequence.
Yeah.
I liked the beginning of it. I was like, oh, this is going to be a good one.
And then it's just
downhill.
Just farted all over the place.
Just
diarrhea in your eyes. It was like, as far as series goes, I mean, if you're a diehard SNL fan and you want to take in everything, even tangentially related to SNL, I would say maybe watch it. But it's definitely not a must.
I think you can easily skip it. I think if it were not for this podcast, I don't think I would have watched it. Until this, I was only curious enough to watch the opening credits.
I never even knew about this until you told me. So that's how I
knew about it from like Wikipedia entries and stuff. There is a little bit of trivia. Because like I said before, they shot this show on the Universal lot.
Right.
They actually more or less duplicated the Delta House from the movie.
Right.
They like apparently it's on the Universal tour, and they took one of the existing structures and they sort of remade it into a duplicate of the Delta House from the movie. And it looks pretty close to the movie, I thought.
All right. Yeah, yeah.
The Omega House didn't really look any different.
Yeah.
But that is still standing on the lot.
It's still, what do they use?
It's been remade, and apparently it was like one of the houses on the street that you see in like Desperate Housewives and other stuff. Like there's like, I think they have a street there that's got like all sorts of houses and stuff you've seen in various sitcoms and shows over the years, like the Munsters' house and the Leave It to Beaver's house are a few doors down from each other.
Oh, nice.
So and they just sort of remake these.
Right.
To suit the purposes of other shows. So
gotcha.
So yeah, apparently you can see the Delta.
You see the Delta House,
on Desperate Housewives, just remade.
But. So go and check it out, guys. You know, see if you can go and wear a toga or just drive your motorcycle up the steps.
Sure,
they'll let you do that.
Tell them
Babs. Tell them Babs said it was cool.
That's right.
Ask for Babs.
And Apparently, this show did help out Michelle Pfeiffer. On the Wikipedia page, it says she appeared in all the episodes with the exception of the pilot. She referred to the show as good exposure and a foot in the door. The series didn't last, but she was noticed by a lot of Hollywood executives.
Oh, I bet.
And her career picked up, and she became a star soon after.
Nice. I mean, is this like the first thing she did?
It was one of the first things that she did, yes.
I mean, this probably like led to big things like Grease 2.
Grease 2, which she did in, like, I think that was like 85, something like that. It was a few years after the Grease movie, I know.
Grease is the word.
But, I mean, within a decade, Michelle Pfeiffer was a huge star. She did, like, Fabulous Baker Boys and Dangerous Liaisons and you know, all that good stuff. So
she was on her way. If you ask me if anybody stood out from this entire cast, like, mm-hmm. Michelle Pfeiffer, of course, because,
mm-hmm.
and Dean Wormer, because, I mean,
John Berman, amazing.
He was good, but, like, and, you know, Hoover was a, you know, kind of charming in the, here and there, but.
I enjoyed James Widows when he had, like, a little more to do. I was like, he's a very engaging performer. I enjoyed him. He kind of transitioned into directing. I know he's like became a big TV director.
Oh, nice.
But he was in the original network version of Charles in Charge. He was like the dad of the family.
Really?
Yeah. Like when Charles in Charge, it like started out as a CBS show and it became a syndicated show, and and like it was the same house, it was the same set, but it was like a whole new family. Like,
oh,
so
yeah.
The original family moved out and then a new family moves in and they're just keep Charles.
Yeah, and they had like a grandfather and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I think Buddy Lembeck got more lines.
Yeah, probably.
I remember that.
Because, you know, you want to get that zapped chemistry.
That's right.
With Willie Ames. And
you want that zapped energy.
You got to harness that zapped, that lightning in the bottle. Mm-hmm. But on IMDb, there are 7 user reviews of Delta House.
What do we got?
The first one I found very interesting.
What is this?
So,
all right.
The headline is, series was below par, but blame ABC.
Oh.
Having played Otter in the series, I can tell you that despite all our best efforts, ABC insisted on programming it in the family hour. Since the humor of Animal House was irreverent and raunchy, and the family hour wouldn't allow that, we were in effect castrated. The producers, writers, and most of the cast were from the original movie, and all of our sensibilities were in line with the movie. Unfortunately, ABC's weren't. Nevertheless, we were never out of the top 10, but the producer, Maddie Simmons, who also produced the movie, had enough fights with ABC that it doomed us after 15 episodes.
Named names.
Apparently, it was only 13. I think he was misremembering. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Peter Fox, Otter.
Are you kidding me? Peter Fox.
One of the actors wrote a review of the show on IMDb. I saw that and I was like, well, that's amazing.
That is bold.
That is something else. I mean, he left this review July 27th, 2002. I thought it was really cool that he took the time to do that.
Yeah,
and setting the record straight, I wasn't able to find any like old ratings to verify that it was never out of the top 10. But I mean, that's amazing if it was just canceled because of the creative differences.
Because I never even heard of anybody doing something like that. I mean, like, usually, I mean, I've heard people canceling shows because of low ratings. But like, if you have a show that's doing pretty well and making money, you keep it in. But like, all right.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's crazy. It's like, instead of arguing with you, I'm just going to cancel. I'm throwing it. I'm just chopping this thing off right now.
That
is bonkers.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, like one of the other user reviews says, in 1979, television was so squeaky clean, you couldn't even say the word pregnant. ABC Land of Three's Company, Wacky Till It Bleeds, Double Entendres, stuck Delta House in an early evening time slot worthy of the Waltons and surgically excised any trace of the original's humor, leaving the cast with nothing to do but pass around tone-deaf anti-establishment banter that even Dean Wormer would have found square.
Jeez.
So.
Yeah. I mean, I guess ABC does have a history of doing... Because, like, I remember...
Yeah.
This is off topic, but when they had the Dana Carvey show... This is kind of on topic, SNL.
The puppies sucking on his teats.
Yeah, and that came on right after Home Improvement.
Yeah.
And I remember watching that episode as a kid, and I was... Like, Home Improvement ended, and then the Dana Carvey show came on. It's a show created by, you know, Louis C.K. and Robert Smigel and all these...
And had a young Steve Carell and Stephen Colbert
on
it.
Yeah, and I think Who else was on it? The Chuck, the guy that...
Chuck Woolery?
No, not Chuck Woolery. You Chuck wasn't
Schumer.
On it. Not Chuck Schumer. The guy who...
Chuck Yeager.
No, not Chuck. The guy, being John Malkovich, the guy that wrote that.
Oh, Charlie Kaufman.
Yeah, Charlie Kaufman. He wrote on that show,
not
too.
Not a Chuck at all.
He's a Chuck. I call him Chuck.
He's a Chuck in your heart.
Yeah. Oh, that sounded weird. But yeah, like, Charlie Kaufman wrote on that show. And so we have all these irreverent minds writing this Dana Carvey show. And it's coming on right after Home Improvement.
Yeah,
and,
like, not a good match.
And the first sketch is, like, Dana Carvey dressed as Bill Clinton and having all these live animals suckling his teats.
And it is literal live puppies. They're sucking on artificial teats.
Yeah.
On...
It's. I mean, we're not doing it justice, but, like, go...
I'm sure it's on YouTube.
But, yeah, but I remember watching that show thinking, like, this doesn't belong here at all.
No, not a good follow-up to Home Improvement.
No, not at all.
I mean, I realized I wanted to give it a boost and stuff, yeah. But no, not
people,
a good...
People ain't ready for that.
No.
I mean, I think that show would do well now. In
yeah, or
days.
It would have done well if it was on cable or
yeah,
something like that.
Cable.
And maybe Animal House, if... I mean, cable wasn't a big thing in 1979, I don't think. But, if you'd done something like an Animal House on HBO... That would work beautifully.
Yeah, HBO or even like a Netflix nowadays or streaming.
Yeah, because then you could get outrageous and you're not under the same sort of restrictions that a primetime network television show is.
Absolutely.
So it was, probably but also like trying to replace John Belushi was
you're not gonna.
That's
do
just
it.
A fool's errand. I was really surprised like how little Blotto was in the show. He's just kind of in and out. He's not in it too much.
I mean, maybe they even they knew that this guy wasn't, Blutarski. So they're like, all right, maybe we'll focus on other people.
Yeah, and I mean, nothing against Josh Mostel. He was perfectly fine.
He was fine.
He did, the stuff he had to do well. But I mean, nobody's Belushi.
No one's Belushi.
Supposedly they offered that role to Jim Belushi, and Jim Belushi was like, no.
Yes, wisely so, because everybody's going to be like comparing him to his brother.
Yeah, and,
like,
I mean, why? I mean, it's got to be tough enough to get out from under John Belushi's shadow. Yeah. Why would you want to invite that comparison?
Exactly. I mean, I'm sure Kevin Farley's, he gets that all the time. People compare him to Chris all the time. And it's just like, you can't do that. Like, they're two different people. They bring two different energies. You can't.
Yeah. Do you have a brother, by the way?
No. Okay. Bro. I mean, people are my brothers.
Oh, sure.
I got a brother. But
I was just wondering if like anything happens to this podcast, if I could slot your brother into your spot.
Well, you can slot in my sister Melanie, if you want to do this.
Okay.
Should anything happen to me?
Okay. Sure.
I will happily pass the reins over to my sister.
All right.
I mean, she's nothing like me, but like she.
No, she's an enthusiastic fan. Though.
She is.
I know she listens to the podcast.
She'll bring her own energy.
She comments on our Twitter.
Yes, absolutely. She'll probably try to fit in a RuPaul's Drag Race into this at some point or something.
Sure.
Like that.
Okay. That won't be an awkward conversation.
Not at all.
Because that's not a show I've ever watched.
You're gonna hear it from her. She's a huge RuPaul fan. So
okay.
I'm just saying.
All right.
You better do your homework, friend.
I better work it. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. You better work. Yas.
So that's Delta House. Not really necessary, not really essential, not really successful.
It's just there.
Not really funny, but it is a thing that exists.
And if you want to see Michelle Pfeiffer in her early 20s.
In a swimsuit.
Then by all means.
By all means. And if you want to see it in like shaky videotape quality with like kind of static and bad sound.
If you're down for that retro Stranger Things vibe. Yeah,
right.
Then go for it.
Right. So, so that was it.
The end.
That was it.
That's all we got for you.
So what are we going to do next week?
Next week. This is next week. Do you want to? Should we spoil it?
Yeah. This let's get a little teaser.
Little teaser. This is going to be an interesting one because we are talking about a movie that is not on DVD, not on Laserdisc.
No.
Not on cable anywhere. Not streaming anywhere.
This movie is buried.
It's buried. This was released on VHS and discontinued immediately soon after. It is the movie Wired. The biopic, the controversial biopic.
About John Belushi.
About John Belushi starring Michael Chiklis, early role as John Belushi.
The Shield, pre-The Commish, Michael Chiklis.
This was
his first big thing.
Yeah, this was his first big thing. I remember that when this came out, there was tons of controversy around it.
Yeah. Because like in the 80s, like Bob Woodward, the Watergate reporter, he wrote a book about John Belushi called Wired.
Right.
which I've never read it, but it apparently it really just emphasized all of Belushi's drug use and all this stuff. And the people who actually knew Belushi were not happy with the book.
Yeah, like,
and they adapted the book into a movie. This was in like 88, 89. I forget what movie, what year the movie came out.
This came out in 89.
And
this movie was made with no one's blessing.
No, like, no. So it's a rebel production.
Yeah, like I don't even know if the director went on to do anything after this. I mean, Michael Chiklis is on the record of saying, yeah, this movie almost destroyed my career.
Yeah.
This is the third thing. He did an episode of Miami Vice.
Sure.
Episode of BL Striker.
Right.
Before this.
Okay.
And this was his first big break. And this movie almost, like, killed him. Not killed him, but, like...
Right. Not John Belushi killed him.
Yeah, he wasn't getting sniped out.
But I do understand the movie opens with John Belushi in a body bag, and his, like, guardian angel is, like, taking him through his life.
Yeah.
So we have that to look forward to.
And his guardian angel is a Puerto Rican cab driver, I think you mentioned.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's where it starts.
Right.
And
that's where it starts, and apparently it gets weirder from there.
Oh boy.
So this is a thing we are going to watch.
Yes. So like I said, it's not on DVD, it's not on video, but it is on YouTube. So if you want to watch along with us,
yeah,
you know, please do. And
so we'll be watching Wired, and we will talk about that. So
yeah, this is going to be a weird one.
This is going to be weird.
I'm looking forward to it. This I'm looking forward to the weirdness.
Yeah. It's we're gonna get weird on this.
It's gonna get crazy, man. It's gonna get weird. It's gonna get nuts. Wow.
So, yeah. So
I don't know why I turned into like a morning DJ right there.
I don't know. I don't know. But I mean, I figure if this podcast is successful enough, I mean, I feel like the best possible scenario is like we're doing a morning DJ show.
Yeah.
Somewhere in Middle America.
Crazy Trumbull and the D man
in like Ohio or something, you know.
What's up?
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Weather on the tens.
We're doing the Friday morning fart song.
Luai, luai. Oh, Lord.
But until that happens, until that dream comes true.
Until then.
Where can the people find us?
Guys, if you want to find me, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Darren Credible, D-A-R-I-N Credible. I got a couple of shows. This Thursday, August 29th, I'm going to be in Jefferson, New Jersey. Doing the Verbal Shenanigans show at the Tap House. Tap House 15, I believe. Is that it? Yeah. Yeah, let's say that. And, September 11th, hilarious day in history, I guess. All right. I'll be in Bushwick, Brooklyn doing a show.
Bushwick,
what's it?
Cadillac.
Oh, Bushwood, gotcha. I'll be at the Star Bar in Bushwick, Brooklyn at the Uprising show, so catch me at that. And if you want to find out all the info, check out my website, darincredible.com, D-A-R-I-N, credible.
All right, and then you can also follow me on Twitter, at Trumbull Comic. You can follow the show's Twitter, at SNL Nerd Show.
Yeah.
And one thing, you can follow the show on non-productive.com.
Yes.
And contribute to our Patreon.
Yes.
And we haven't had anybody review the show
on
iTunes for about a month. So we need some more reviews. If you like the show, if you enjoy this show, if you enjoy hearing us talk about obscure television shows from the late 70s, and really, who doesn't?
We know you do.
We know you do. Please leave us a review on iTunes or Apple Music or Apple Podcasts, whatever
that
service is now.
Yeah. Write it on an Apple. Do something.
Yeah. Just our you know, whatever podcast app you listen to.
Yeah.
We can really use that, and that really does help the show out.
Absolutely, yeah. Reviews, Patreon. You want to give some money? Keep the lights on.
Yep.
We're not allergic to money, so
no. We like money.
Mm-hmm. So send us those fat ducats.
That's right. That's right. We want to get $6,000 a year in contributions from the Flounder family.
We want to sell out immediately.
We do. Yeah. We do. We are for sale.
Yes.
Okay. All right, so I think that's about it for this week.
Yeah, that's all we got. Until next week, we'll see you later.
All right. See you later, SNL nerds.
Bye. Bye.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.